We did a couple of hours on Saturday with Eric with the Harbor Group. And it was, he had Duncan McPherson, who runs Prada. You may have run across him, Rob, but there's a lot of similarities. I felt better about that call, that we wouldn't be, you know, going off in different divergence. I felt much better for the fact that it was a lot of similar conversations, a lot of similar thought processes, you know, ultimately challenging ourselves at the end of the day, you know, to be the best that we can. So I was happy with that, at least. I thought it made sense.
Yeah, he was quoting Jim Collins and Good to Great, talking about what can you be world class at, what does the world need, you know, so some of that sounded familiar. And the notes I took were, you know, he was, a good question he had was asking prospective clients, you know, what prompted you to be here, you know, and talking about clients must be able to articulate your process. Are you referable? Do you deserve referrals? Spend time on the clients that deserve you, not the ones that necessarily just need you. And some clients, he kind of had this this transitional middle or something where there are clients that could eventually be ones that, you know, are worth it. You know, are we a $5 billion team that only has $2 billion now? Or, you know, are you underselling yourself? Yeah, the movable middle is what he was saying. Reframe your clients that are most deserving, you know, of your work in the movable middle that you can upgrade. Focus on them. Talk about the loyalty ladder with suspects, prospects. And then he referred to Tuckman's model on forming, storming, norming, performing, you know, making sure the team is a philosophical fit, strategic fit, and practical fit. So, I mean, there's nothing earth-shattering, similar conversation. I actually, the reason I was a minute or two late is because I was talking to Dan Guggenheim, and Dan used to work with Rob Brown at Supernova.
Yeah.
And he said he had some calls with you later. Dan and his father are two of the key members on the team we're joining. His father's 85, and he's setting records. He's doing $1.3 million, mostly managed. You know, it's great. He's doing great business. He's Mr. Man About Town. Dan's doing Supernova Light. You know, he hasn't taken the plunge. He's working. He told me he was working with like, 120 people, and he's using the Supernova framework and call cycle and everything. Like, he is talking to all of them, but he's got too many. And you know, he knows that. But he hasn't taken the plunge. So, you know, I told him, I'm like, you know, I said, I'm kind of going the opposite. I am taking the plunge, and I'm, you know, I didn't drop the I'm choosing growth over fear line on him. But, you know, I said, I'm down to 35 or 40 families, about 60 mailing addresses. And, you know, we're continuing to transition relationships with him. And, you know, hopefully it's going to give me the bandwidth to take that next step. So if he sees me probably, you know, clipping at his heels with my production, then I'm sure that'll get his attention a little bit more, you know, because I know I'm climbing a lot faster than people who are in his situation are, you know, because just too much for him to do. He spends so much time servicing. So if I can have a string together another couple of years like we have the last few, you know, I'll be breathing down his neck. You know, this week we did Larry and I, and Tim and I both had Supernova leadership discussions and talked about what, you know, they were working on or struggling with or doing good with. And I think the biggest takeaways were that Tim's going to focus on the marketing aspect of Supernova right now, because he only has a handful of clients that really, he only has a handful of clients at Supernova he can really maximize the process with. A lot of his clients are not at that level yet. And then, you know, with Larry, we were just talking about, Larry's been super duper active this year, but we were just talking about, you know, maybe the use of his time, like for him to have like an hour long conversation with a client to convert $10,000 into managed may not be the best use of his time. Cause you know, at Larry's pay, he's making $175 an hour. And if we convert $10,000 to managed, it's, it's going to be $100 in revenue split three ways less taxes. He's making $15. So right. You know, you can work at McDonald's for $15 an hour. So we're just talking about how, you know, we need to start targeting higher value opportunities, and myself included. You know, I've brought in $1 million this year, but it's been over 8 or 9 transactions. I mean, $1 million is $1 million, but him and I both need to start bringing in fresh millions, and you know, that's where we're going to really move the needle. We're not going to move it by $30,000-$40,000 at a time. I mean, it's nice and it's incremental business, but you know, we're not going to go to be $2 million producers $30,000 at a time. So if you're doing those assets and getting those assets when you're doing your supernova calls and you're kind of rolling it into your existing call schedule and meeting, then that's fine. But to be reaching out and getting stuck in conversations over peanuts isn't really going to do it for us. But Larry's done a really good job converting over a lot of business to managed and from higher workflow, like getting into our discretionary programs and simplifying his life a lot. You know, you have to know, you know, he's the implementation process much more this year, and Barry's as well. Like we've converted over another 30 or 40 accounts already into our discretionary models. So that's definitely heading in the right direction. And, you know, as we do that, our story simplifies and our implementation gets easier. And then we're just deciding between which of the six models, how much is going in, and we know the stories and we don't have to figure out why one manager was completely wonky this quarter and explain all that stuff. So it's just, it leverages our time even more. And we're also, you know, in many cases, we're actually able to earn more on the relationship because we're not having to pay mutual fund costs or a third-party manager. So the clients are a little bit more receptive to paying a little higher fee when we say, hey, you're paying $140 now, we'll do all this for $120, you know, and whereas we may have only been at 1 or 1.1 before, so we're actually able to cut their costs and increase our ROA and give them better performance and streamline our lives. So a lot of that's heading in the right direction. And, you know, Larry's been good at his tracker. We've been getting these back in play with the activity trackers. You know,
you have a printer at your house?
Yeah, it's not the best. It works sometimes. We figure it out. You know,
what,
Banco
did you
wanted
send
to get
that to yourself?
Yeah, just a blank one. You know, Manko wanted to get on the call with you and me last week on my private call and discuss, you know, if this was the right path for him. And I pretty much have told him, I said, we just, you know, none of us care. Like, if you want to do it, get on board, start doing your stuff, and then we'll fold you in. And I emailed Cindy back and I asked her to take him off the emailings because it's confusing him. I don't know what he wants to talk to you about that he doesn't know in the 2.5 years we've already spoken, you know. But generally speaking, we told him, do whatever you want to do. We're moving forward, you know. So no hard feelings, no upset, just we're moving forward.
Right.
So I haven't got a chance to talk to Christine as much as I'd like to. We had, you know, we've been steady, and she's been pulled a couple different ways, and she had some computer problems this week. So it's been even more difficult from, you know, just trying to get the workflow done. You know, like we have so much business right now, like we're overwhelming her, which is great. You know, we need to work on refining some of her processes. And I've been begging her for years to take ownership over that. And, you know, she's been a little reluctant, so we've just kind of implemented a level A, B, and C type thing, where in our subject, level A means it needs to be done today, level B means it needs to be done by the end of business tomorrow, level C means please try to do it by the end of the week. So we're trying to help assign the importance of things, that way she doesn't have to decide what's most important, because she may not know that something's vitally important to us unless we tell her.
Right.
You know, we're trying to fold her in with the new group, and everyone's very welcoming of her. She's a assistant trainer. Like, she trains the new hires and everything, and she has a lot of knowledge and she can get answers for people. So they like that very much. Tim, you spoke with Eric for a while, and you had a positive conversation with him this morning. If you want to bring Larry and Rob up to speed real quick on that.
Right. You know, Eric, the head of the Harbor Financial Group, just reached out to me, you know, knowing that I had some background in our Aladdin software and risk analysis. And he's got a, you know, a very large prospect that he wanted to just, you know, do one of his risk reports for. And so he had never done it. I kind of walked him through the front end, and I kind of put a pause and said, Eric, you know, this is a little bit more difficult than you think it is to just jam it through in one call. If you want to send me the statement, it was from Goldman Sachs. You know, more than happy to do it for you. You know, noted that, you know, the VIX and risk and doing this whole stuff is kind of my hobby. I enjoy doing it, and I've got no problem. You know, plenty of time, this, that, and the other thing. And he's a little hesitant. It almost seems like he didn't want to burden me or bother me. But, you know, I don't know if it's just because his team is used to, you know, if I put my hands on your prospect and you land the business, then I'm expected to have a certain percentage of payout. But I assured him that that's not my shtick. You know, as an FAA, I'm just here to make it work. And he knows that I've done a lot of project-based stuff for our team before the merge or the announcement of the merge. And so I made him comfortable with allowing me to do that for him. And so he's going to, this afternoon, email me over the statements from Goldman Sachs and, you know, allow me to kind of work on this report for him and get it going. But in the context, it's funny, he said, you know, I'm gonna make you my new project, my new FAA. And, you know, he acknowledged he doesn't really know me, but Ryan's told him nothing but great things, and he's heard really good things from other FAs that know me. And, you know, he really, again, he wants to look out for me. And he mentioned his other two FAAs that are, you know, deep into the program. One of them's already graduated, you know, a year or so ago, Ross, how he's doing very well and how Ross was part of his quote-unquote program. And then Monique is the other one. She's also going through his program, and she's the only one kind of left. And so now I'm his new project. And he had mentioned how the way that he does it, his program for FAs is different than how Larry, Barry, and Ryan do it. And I assured him that Larry, Barry, and Ryan have lived up to every promise they've ever made to me, and they are keeping me alive and doing well by me. And he just said that it's different how he's going to do it. And again, assured me that I was his next project, which is reassuring for me. You know, knowing that Larry, Barry, and Ryan have lived up to everything that they've you know, promised me, and now I've got this new you know, chief, so to speak, that, you know, we've never really had a handshake deal or really looked each other in the eye. And for, you know, for him to kind of say that was good. It was comforting. But again, I think he values me as you know, my technical expertise and/or, you know, the fact that I'm the low man on the totem pole, and I do have, you know, room and time to do stuff for the team. And so I hope he takes me up on that and puts me as his go-to guy, because I don't mind working early mornings, late nights, and weekends to make sure stuff gets done. And, you know, again, the more that I can prove that to him, the better off I will be in my journey to being a successful FA with the rest of the team.
Great of you. It's great, Tim. Way to go. Some guys like to mentor people, and they get a kick out of it, and it's just sort of their way of giving back. And, yes, he will ask of you, but every one of those is a learning experience. So,
right.
Yeah, take it.
And I'm trying to, you know, he gives everybody a 30-second pitch every morning and every afternoon. And instead of being the silent partner, again, I try to pick on or extrapolate things that maybe could benefit him and his dealings and the team. You know, I'm a fresh face through Morgan Stanley and into the retail side of the business, but, you know, I've been doing this for 10 or so years, which I think is decent enough to have a voice and an opinion. And so I've chimed in on a couple of different things on the morning or afternoon calls. I forget which one the last couple of weeks. And, you know, I feel like the team is profited off of my advice or my additives. And one was actually, you know, he had done a slide deck for his entire client book. And he missed a slide, or I thought he did. And so I pointed it out and why I thought it was a beneficial slide. And, you know, he enjoyed that. And he mentioned it actually on the call today, too. He said, you know, thanks for pointing that out. It was a pretty good bit of information. It was just basically showing, you know, people being invested over a 20-year period and what their incremental annual return was based on missing, either being fully invested or missing, you know, 15 of the best days or 30 of the best days or 45 of the best days over that 20-year period, and how it degrades your performance over a long period of time. And one of his slide decks was talking about cash flow and exiting and entering And it was a little bit complicated for your layman, somebody that's got money, but they don't really necessarily know what the markets are. And the slide that I queued to actually just, it's the, you know, where the rubber meets the road. So again, additive stuff. So he knows that I'm paying attention and he knows that it can be a value add if he asks me questions. And that's kind of my job and my task myself as we move forward.
Well, especially if you're, you know, you're in charge of marketing, that is marketing, right? That's effective marketing. And you're just trying to get people to be compliant. One of the problems is people aren't compliant and they miss those 30 best days, 15 best days. And then they miss, you know, they wonder why they're getting 5% instead of, you know, everybody talks about 10 or 9.5 or 9 or 11 or depending on the year we're measuring it, should be able to get 9% in the market year over year, decade over decade. But if you're not in the market those critical days, you end up getting about 5%. And there was an article in Barron's, I think this week on, or anyway, there's a, I got to pull it up, but I copied it to my memory. That 4% of the stocks generate about 96% of the returns. And that you really need to understand that in order to not trade out of your best companies. That if you really understand the market, when you find an Amazon, you keep it until it's not an Amazon. Right? And otherwise you end up missing a good deal of the market.
If you can find what you're talking about, I'd be interested in seeing that, that piece.
Yeah, it's really good. I have it. I downloaded it last night and I haven't had a chance to read the whole thing, but it's, it was in it. Anyway, I've got it. Yeah. And that's the sort of thing that convinces people to, let their profits run. You know, that's the biggest challenge is I've got a stock group on Fridays and the biggest challenge I have with these guys, they're all wealthy guys. They just don't understand how you do that. You know, why would you keep Amazon this whole time? Why would you keep that the whole time? I said, because you don't find that many real great winners. You know, you get the hot dot and you get a hot idea, but you know, if you don't let them roll, then you're going to screw yourself. Well, what about diversification and what about this and that? And I said, diversification is overrated. you gotta diversify, but you know, you diversify to moderate your returns. Cause they're hard to find. You know, you find, you know, Intel.
It's a big source of contention on our group. We have some clients with some concentrated positions. Like I have a client that has a huge block of Accenture and that stock has been an absolute freight train for the last 6 or 8 years. I mean, the problem was we met her. She was a recent divorcee with $1 million house and $5 million of Accenture stock. So we couldn't leave her all in the stock, you know, so we diversified out about 2/3 of it. Problem is that, you know, the stock has like gone up fivefold since we did that. So, you know, she understands and she's not mad at us or anything, but it's still a real kick in the ass when you think like that. That 5 million could have gone to 25 million. And right now her net worth is about 12 million. So she's doing fine, but you know, she could be doing even finer but for every one of those, we have had the ones that have collapsed, you know, where, you know, we had a client that was big in NYSE when it went public and they went, the stock went to 121. We begged the guy to sell or begged the guy to call her and he wouldn't call her until it fell to about 75. We actually saved about $1.5 million buying puts, but the stock fell into the 20s, and then they got bought out by one of the global exchanges for like $35. So it could never get back to where it was. You know, like it was brutal. So like, you know, we always have those cautionary tales. And I told her, I'm like, what if it's a consulting firm. If they have a scandal, they could be screwed and, you know, your whole life could be destroyed. You know, like it's not worth it. But to your point, yeah, it's tough when you have some of those clients that have rode Apple or rode Amazon or, you know, she actually has Facebook from the IPO too.
Well, the other one that we run across is Publix. public employees that are, you know,
that's a cult though, Larry. That's a cult. That's different.
That's a cult. Okay.
Yeah.
But, you know, you talk about those millionaires next doors. Yeah.
You guys were the ones, I think, that told me about the guy that was in charge of meatpacking or something, that, you know, the meat department that had $1 million, you know, in retirement.
No. $5 million. He was assistant grocery manager. And he's been there for 35 years, and he all of his investing he put into public stock. He never bought into the stock market. He just kept buying public shares that whole time. And they had an ESOP, so when people got fired, it just went back into the share pool, and they got in trouble years back where they had the lawsuit because they were firing everyone before their shares vested, so all the managers were getting all their shares, you know? And, you know, public – but – this guy's never made, I mean, he's making a salary of $85,000, and the guy's got, he's got 110,000 shares of Publix at $40-something a share.
I mean, great country.
You know.
What a
great country. Yeah, for Pakistani immigrant who, you know, just worked hard and kept going. You know, so it's going to work out well for his family. But now I'm in the enviable position of telling him he should diversify some of that. So they're always going to go public next year.
Well,
like
keep in
every
mind,
year.
Merrill was 10, and I kept and bought, you know, I had options as a manager all the way up to 100 and change, right? And then it went back to 6 from 100. Now, fortunately, I used Eaton Vance exchange traded funds. Do you know those, right?
Yes.
Yeah. The exchange fund, you mean?
The exchange fund, right?
Yeah.
So you want to use those, you know, you need, I mean, when you were, I had 90% Merrill with $3 million of margin. Okay. So think about that at 100 going to 6, where I would have been if I hadn't, I sold at 60 and I diversified in the exchange trades, exchange funds all the way down. So there's the concentrated positions that, you know, that work because they're not, you know, they're 10% of my portfolio, not because they're 90%, right? I can afford to let Amazon go because it's not a huge, I mean, it's 10% of my portfolio, but that doesn't, that's okay, right? That's good.
It's like we're going to be with Morgan Stanley stock, Ryan.
Right.
Yeah. So, I mean, Rob, for us and our group this year,
yeah,
I think that the biggest key for us is going to be the developing centers of influence and VIPSA. I took pictures of the VIPSA pages and texted them to the team. That's a little 7-page section of the book to make sure that they can all reread that fresh and not have to go find the book or find whatever. But like, you know, that's what it is. And that conversation we had a week or two ago, where you're like, if you can double your top 20 or 30 clients, you're going to double your business. I'm like, shit, you're right. You know, so like I've been pressing hard on the VIPSA conversations. I mean, clearly my language is not where it needs to be yet, but I've been making it very clear to clients that I appreciate them. I enjoy working with them. The ones that have referred to me, I've said, thank you so much. Your friends are loving it. You're doing a service to them and to me and to everyone. I actually got a referral directly after one of those conversations 2 days later. It's tough because they're trying, but, you know, I work with two ladies. One's got $3.5 million and one's got $2 million with me, and their third friend just happens to be an idiot and likes to day trade, and she's blown herself up a few times. So she lives in the same development, does all the same things, goes to the same temple, but she's only got like 150 in stocks and 200,000 in annuities, and 50,000 of that is in NIO, the Chinese electric car company, and she's a cowboy. And I told her, I was like, look, I'm like, if you want to work with our team, you're friends with Betty and Sadell, we're happy to bring you on and put you in our programs. Like, you're not going to be dealing with me. You know, you'd be working with either Tim or Sandy or one of the other partners on the team. I'm like, you meet us. You know, like we're going to keep you from blowing yourself up. But you know, I'm not able to to work with you and day trade with you and do all those things. Like, if you went with us, it would be give us money to go in the model, because she could be a great referral source. She was like one of the top executive recruiters in New York City for many, many years. Like, she's just extremely engaging and very bright, but she's lived her life and she spent her money, and her husband are, you know, they like to, you know, they spent all their money going around the world 50 times. You know what I mean? So, unfortunately it was
that's
not
Adele Rubin.
Yeah. Adele. Right. So that okay. was not, yeah, that was not, a, I mean, if they introduced me to five people in the neighborhood, I'm going to be able to work with three or four of them and bring the rest on as clients. So it was good, but you know, unfortunately, you know, it was not at the level we want. And I can only ask old ladies to pre-qualify people so hard. You know what I mean? Generally speaking, if an old lady's hanging out with another old lady, they're going to be in a similar social strata.
Right.
But it was good, though. I mean, I got a response. Like, I talked to Sadell on a Tuesday, and then, like, Thursday afternoon, this lady called me. And
then you also, but you got to follow that up with positive reinforcement as well. Did you speak to Sadell? She called the day I spoke with her.
I haven't talked to you. I wrote her a thank you card.
Okay. She did, FYI. She wanted to know about GameStop. It took 5 minutes. So I spoke with her, let her know, and she asked about if Adele ever called. I said, I will check with Brian.
Right. Yeah, I like sending the old ladies mail. They like getting letters in the mail, and I write in cursive for them, and, you know, they really enjoy that. And it's an added touch. An email is just whatever, and I talk to them on the phone all the time. But yeah, no, so someone gives me a referral that goes through. I usually do a celebration dinner where, like, when Betty gave me Sadell, Mary Beth and I took them out to Rustico Italiano on the Ave in Lake Worth. And then they loved Mary Beth's lip gloss she was wearing that night. So I sent each of them some of that lip gloss as, like, a follow-up gift. And, like, just, you know, since it was like $6 Neutrogena shit, but they loved it. Oh my God. Like, they're still wearing it. They tell me, like, oh, I'm wearing the lip gloss. So, you know, once I get my hooks in somebody, like, it's really good. It's just, for me, Rob, I'm having a hard time, you know, like, my normal social circle, young affluent, I guess, but, you know, most of my friends, I'm not asking for business as much. You know what I mean? Like, I can't. You know, I don't like dealing with the direct friend, but, you know, I have a couple that want to put money into some of my strategies. And, like, if it's going into a strategy, then, you know, I'm not making that decision independently for them. But some of my good high school friends have actually given a few referrals, which is nice. You know, so they are willing to refer. But we need to do a better job with our COIs this year. That's going to be a primary focus for me, and you know, I'm going to make it a primary focus for the team, because Tim and me and you know, Larry knows so many people, and I think Larry's going to get some synergies off this when there's people he knows that probably also know, like, Howard or somebody else on the team, like Dan's dad, and you know, I think that, like, they're going to be able to combine forces to kind of win some people over, because some of the people probably aren't working with Howard because they think he's too old, and some of the people may not be working with Larry for one reason or another. And I think if they're able to kind of say, hey, you know Howard, and, you know, we work together, we'd love to, you know, oh, you know, maybe it might unlock a door or two for us.
Good. Ryan, the last time we talked, we did talk about the value that we had created for you. And we talked about whether it would make sense to do some brainstorming about who else would value this as much as you have. Did you think about it?
I did more than think about it. I took action about it. This has been next to my phone here, my list. So I had conversations with two advisors, and one of them, I think actually, it's pretty open-minded. I sent her a copy of your book. So she got the copy of the book the day after we spoke. It's Kim Kessing. Kim's at a crossroads in her career and in life. She's the one that was on Long Boat Key. Her significant other was a very prominent member of Rockwell Collins Automation. He owned a company, and then they were absorbed by Rockwell, and he became their head of, like, European manufacturing. The guy's name's Paul something. And she, Larry, her and Paul just broke up. So
yeah, I know. She called me last week, and we had a conversation about that. And she was also spending a lot of time figuring or kind of picking my brain about our merger and whether that would be good for her as well.
Yeah, so she's from West Texas, she's from East Texas. Based out of like the Houston area, Longview, I think is what it's called. She was a chemical engineer working in the energy field. Really smart, really inquisitive, a little nutty professor sometimes. She goes a little bit too deep on things, and I think she can get caught on the minutia. But she's now, you know, in her mid-50s. She's single. She's been stuck doing probably about $500,000 to, you know, anywhere from $500,000 to $700,000 of production a year, maybe a little bit less in a bad year. She's bright, well-spoken, and she's very, she's built well. So, you know, she can command the audience of a lot of these wealthy guys. And she's just missing that focus and that practice management some. I think she's the type of person who can get stuck on a side project for 8 hours researching foreign exchange policy of like Japan. I'm being serious. She's very smart, and her and I share a lot of ideas and go back and forth on things. But I think that, you know, I think she's going to be open to a conversation here shortly. She told me she's going to get started on the book and, you know, take a look at it. The other guy I talked to is the guy, Charlie Fisher, and timing was a little poor. He re-upped recently. He does CEG consulting. I don't know if you're familiar with that program.
Right.
You know them?
Yeah.
So Charlie needs a Sherpa, just personality. Hey, what did we talk about? Daddy's on the phone right now talking to grown-ups.
Do you have any dominoes?
I do not. There was one domino that I put on the counter in the other room, but that's it. Daddy's talking. I'm working on them asking for, you know, at least come in and say excuse me before busting in asking about toys. So Charlie, he's like a big Tony Robbins guy. Like, he has to go like every year or so, and then he gets all fired up and comes back ready to tear it up. You know, he's a single guy. He's got his work to focus on. He's on a mission to get to be a big producer. He envisions the success, and he believes in the success, and he's actually been bringing in a decent amount of assets. But, you know, I think he feels like the CEG empowers him or something, like all the little handouts they can give and crap. But he's very good with the language and the delivery. Like, you know, he's not the most fit gentleman, you know, or anything like that. Like, you know that Chris Farley character where the guy, like, lives in a van down by the river? You know, like that's kind of the vibe you can get sometimes from him. He dresses well, you know, but
he needs to be a little more polished and a little more refined. Is that what?
But that's the thing. In a meeting, he is. It's hysterical. Like I mean, I've been to a Metallica concert with him before, and I have a decent outside of work relationship with him. But like in meetings, he has the language and the process, and he has the agenda, and like he's good. Like, and he does it. And quite frankly, he's going to do $75,000 in revenue this month. So I mean, he's doing business. But he came from Ameriprise, and like, you know, he's been trying to climb the ladder, and Morgan Stanley's been kicking him in the nuts the entire way up. You know, he's willing to spend, because the CEG thing's like 17 grand, I think.
Yeah.
And the initial onboard's 25.
Right.
But he's another one where we do a lot of business together, and he's looking to – he's been with a team that doesn't really appreciate him, and I think he's looking at – kind of starting more of his own team over the next few years. I think he's someone that I'd like to get on the phone with you at some point. I just don't know when he's going to, you know, if he has this financial commitment to whatever. Well, maybe I'll catch him the day after the Tony Robbins thing. He'll be fired up. We'll do three programs, you know.
Where does he work? But, where does he work in your office? Your old office?
Yeah.
Where they go in? Okay.
Yeah, yeah. He's in our office. And
would he, would he be a good guy for you to join up with eventually?
Maybe.
Have that
because,
conversation.
Yeah, we. So he had
that's,
a little bit
that's
of a
been
run
one
in.
Of, well, Rob's question was, would it be good for us to join up with? In Morgan Stanley world, we couldn't really bring anybody on. I don't. Because our payout wasn't high enough to make it financially rewarding for them. Did Ryan have this conversation with you yet?
Yeah.
Rob?
Yeah. I'm going to save us all a lot of time. He's a member of a team up in New York that does some stuff, but that's not going to be a long-term thing. They're idiots.
Okay.
In terms of, you know, he had a little bit of a run-in with Eric and Howard a while back, and he's kind of a little bit independent, so I don't think he would ever join up with the Harbor Group, per se. He wants to be the front man, and he wants to be Mr. Man About Town. You know, he's active in the church, and he's active in the veterans. He was a Army, was he a Ranger or something, I believe, Tim? You know, or he was in the...
He was an artillery officer.
Okay. So he's tied in with that. And he's also in the Masonic Lodge. So he definitely has a need for belonging to a group, you know? And he works those angles. And like I said, he brings in a lot of assets, but most of his clients are, I'd say, less sophisticated, more like they're believing in the suit and the agenda he's handing it to them, you know, like, but he's getting intro somehow. I'm not really sure how deep to go on that, but he's someone who needs you and everything he's trying to do aligns with your thing. We just need to get him to that point, so to speak. But,
yeah. And I find guys that spend money are guys that are good prospects. You don't worry about them making a profit on me. You know, they'll make a profit on what I sell. So, you know, that's not usually an issue with those guys. Once a guy has been used to hiring coaches, they're good candidates. Mm-hmm. The problem I find is that if they hire a lot of, you know, if I'm their third or fourth coach, then they're going to have a fifth and a sixth coach. And I would rather be, you know, their only coach. But that's not an ego thing. I don't think they get enough out of our relationship before they're ready to move on because they want the new blue chair. So he would actually be a very good prospect for a year. I don't know if he would be for 5 years. So don't worry about, I would not worry about the money. I would just simply get an introduction. Just let's do it. Let's do a Zoom introduction with these two people and let them decide.
No, I'll work on it.
Yeah. I mean, that's all you need. And, you know, it's your time, my time, and their time, but your time will be minimal. You just do the introduction and jump off, and I'll take the time with them, and I'll qualify them. And this is what you want to do, by the way, okay? So what I just...
Yeah, I was just going to frame this. Like, Rob flipped the tables on me last week when I was saying, like, I was scared to ask for referrals or whatever, and... He basically gave me the VIPSA and was like, you know, do you feel like you've received value? Has our relationship been beneficial to you? Has it helped you grow your business and all these things? And he's like, you know, could you do me a favor and think of a couple people that you can introduce me to, you know, and I'll ask you about it later. And he basically did what I did. And like, he's like, did you feel put off by that? And I said, no, because, you know, I feel like you have brought me value and I felt like you've earned the right to ask. And, you know, that's where we need to get our mindset to, is that we've earned the right to ask this question. You know, some clients will get dodgy and, you know, not everyone's going to give us a referral. But if we don't ask, we're definitely not going to get a referral. And I don't think anyone's going to fire us for having the VIPSA conversation with them. Like, we made them so uncomfortable that they can't work with us anymore. I mean,
even if they did, they're not real clients anyway. So,
right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what I just did with you was what you need to do with your clients will tell you, I don't know, I may not be a good prospect. And you go, you know, that's let me decide that. Okay. I'll spend some time with him. It's on the house, basically. We'll make sure that we give him a good audience. And if it's a good fit, great. If not, then maybe it will be sometime later. So,
right.
You know,
and, you know, maybe, you know, Dan may decide he wants to re-engage or something. You know, I told him he could jump on one of my calls and talk to you at some point to see, you know, because he's going to be in a process here in the next few years. We've got three old guys on the team retiring.
Yeah.
And it's essential to the success of this team to be able to distribute those assets effectively to advisors that can handle the additional deal flow and handle the relationships. So his dad's actually selling a lot of his book to Eric and not necessarily to Dan. But there's two other older guys that are also 94 and 87 that are not long for the industry. You know, he does have some more business coming his way. And like, if he's already got 120 people, like, you know, I believe he's doing like $1.2 million. So you're talking about a 10,000 average per client. You know, it's good business if you're doing $1.2 million, but, you know, my goal is to do $1.2 million with 40 or 50 people, you know? So, you know, he'll come to that realization.
Well, and, just remember, you know, also, remember how, where you were before you got with me. Okay. So when you look at somebody like Kim, don't worry that they're not completely ready for me. You know,
right.
they need that, and they may not be in the perfect place at when they meet me. Nobody, nobody is, or they wouldn't need me. So,
right.
You know, don't, you can't wait till they're perfect. So if she'll read the book, or at least, you know, you give her, look, we're going to have a call with Rob next week. Could you try and read the book before then? Then we can have a good conversation and you and I can move forward. We don't want to string these things out. We want to either close them or move on. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And that's from you too. That's what you want to do. You don't want to have a bunch of prospects. You want to have people.
Yeah. Like, I followed up with this young couple the other day, and they, you know, Tim and I have been working on them, and they're the people that are like super nice and engaging. And then they're like, oh, we'll get you paperwork. And then like, it never arrives. And then they're like, oh, we were really busy. Can we push this call another week? And oh, the kids have this. And like, I sent them an email the other day. I'm like, hey, the two core strategies that we run, like literally this was the email. Hey guys, you know, the two core strategies we started talking on October 14th. The two core strategies we run since Halloween are up 16 and 35%. I'm like, we'd love to reengage you and see where things are at. And, you know, if you could send us over some statements, we could start doing some analysis and everything and hopefully get the ball rolling. But I'm like, you know, like these people are missing out. It's not, everyone's busy, you know, like we're all busy. We all got stuff
right.
going on, you know?
You shouldn't be too busy to make good decisions.
Right. So I'm going to loop back around with some of these people and, you know,
yeah, because what happens is, Ryan, you think you've got a bunch of prospects and they're really not. Okay. They're suspects.
Yeah. Yeah.
You gotta qualify them and close them or get them the hell off of your list and move on.
See, yeah, I just had one call through that I was working on.
Yeah, call me when you're ready.
I just had one I was working on for like 2 years that like literally fell through at the finish line. The Cuban lady in Miami that Manny and I went down and, you know,
right.
she sold her auto body shop and got a couple million bucks. And, you know, the grandson is buddies with my brother and the fire department. And like, we drove down to freaking Miami and like did a 2 hour meeting in all Spanish with her. And like, we did another Zoom call with the whole family and, you know, we're like, look, you know, if she would have put money in with us, you know, she's been sitting in the bank this whole time, you know, but like, she just has a different mindset, you know, like Castro took everything from her family at gunpoint in their front yard in the 60s. And, you know, she got out of there and came here and she built up a couple million bucks. And now she's just too scared to lose it and she won't invest. I mean, she's got a couple hundred thousand, but it's all in Microsoft, Home Depot, and Pfizer. Those are the only three stocks she bought. But she's got like a million plus in cash sitting there doing nothing. And we're like begging her to like, you know, like think about your daughter and your son and your grandkids. Like this could be generational money, or if you get nothing on it, you'll just spend it down. You know, like it's so aggravating because I want to help.
Jesus complex. The Jesus
the what?
Complex. It's called the Jesus complex.
You want to save everyone?
Yeah.
My wife accuses me of that. I'm a fixer.
What about,
you know?
What about
just my dating life?
Long-term care.
Right.
So anyway,
is there any exposure? If she wants to do that, is there any exposure for life insurance or long-term care?
For her? No, cancer.
Yes. So is this
cancer.
Okay, I was going to say that way she can give it to her family and it just protects them, but okay.
Yeah, no, not possible. I mean, shit, she'd be better off just, you know, let her buy state put bonds or anything would be better than what she's doing. So,
true.
You know, we'll see. I mean, if the market crashes, maybe, you know, we can opportunistically lob a call in, but I'm not going to, she's coming off the prospect list, so to speak. Like, you know, it's aggravating, but, you know, it is what it is. So
yeah, you can't expect. I mean, look, if you give me five prospects, right? You give me five.
One or two of them.
If what do you think? I mean, what do you think my probabilities are of closing? I mean, it's not me that's going to have the problem closing. The problem is there are going to be five prospects that you think are prospects. And they're not going to be prospects. I will close two of the five.
Mm.
Okay. But if you start thinking now about who is the perfect prospect, you'll come up with a really one where it's going to be one-on-one, right? You're going to give me somebody and I'm going to close them. But if I just ask you once to do it, then you're not going to come up with that perfect person. So I need to be kind of reminding you on an ongoing basis, and then you're going to come up with the perfect prospect.
Right. I mean, and part of it, you know, the thing that I run into, at least with you, is like, I don't want everyone in my office doing supernova.
Ah, there's the other one. See?
I don't want my competition doing supernova. I'll tell you that much. You know, I mean, like if we're talking different marketplace, like, you know, I'll send you all the referrals you want in Philadelphia. But you know, like some of my neighbors, you know, maybe with, you know, it's like direct competitor at Raymond James and stuff. And like, you know, I don't, you know, there's
that's fair. That's fair. I get that. I'm fine.
So,
with it.
You know, For my side of the fence, like if it's Charlie or if it's Kim or whatever, you know, they're feeding me business. I have $10 million of their money that I'm managing and getting paid on.
Oh,
and they're strategic partners of mine. So the more they do, the more I'm going to do and the more our team's going to do. So, you know, I want them to grow their franchises more aggressively. You know, some people I don't necessarily view as competition, like Larry, if like Omar, you know, wanted help at LPL or whatever, you know, we're not competing for the same type of people that he is typically. But like, you know, that is the other thing you are up against where it would be much easier to give referrals out of market. You know, that's why like, you know, Tim Burns says, hey, will you talk to these people? I'm like, absolutely. You know, anything you need, you know, helps Tim, helps Rob, helps, you know, helps everyone, helps these guys.
Right.
But
in Pennsylvania. Right.
But right. Exactly.
You know,
yeah.
But here's the other thing. You guys know people from your old trips you used to take, right? for recognition clubs and things like that, where you meet people and you get to be friends and you know them across the country. Those are all good opportunities.
So, like, I have a friend in New York who's part of, like, a massive monster team, like, that does, I mean, like, the one partner left in Tooker, and he was doing, like, $8 or $10 million by himself, you know, like, one of those yep. types. They do a lot of hedge fund business. Like, do you find that those people are willing to continue to learn, or you find that most of them are set in their ways?
I've taught all the private bankers at every firm. Not all of them, meaning I haven't taught them all. But I did a seminar for the private bankers at Morgan Stanley. I've done them at, you know, at UBS. I went to Switzerland and did all the private bankers over there, and I did the offshore guys in Miami. And so, mm-hmm. you know, I've done a lot of ultra high net worth, and they're no different, Ryan. That's why I can tell you, you know, you say, well, he's doing doing 50 million. Well, he's still not calling all his clients.
Right.
You'd be surprised. It's shocking. I had a guy.
Right. That, like.
Anyway.
I mean, my big question, my big takeaway mentally that, you know, was ringing in my head, like, from that, the thing when Duncan was talking to us, is just like, he just simply asked, like, are you guys a $5 billion team doing $2 billion under assets? You know, like, is that what you are? And that's where, like, you know, that's where you have to start asking yourself those hard questions, where it's like, why am I not getting the $20 and $30 million clients? Is it because I'm not projecting that image? Is it because I'm not good enough? Is it because I don't know all the foundation topics and the donor advised funds and the private wealth stuff? Like, you know, and because, like, every time I talk to somebody, like, oh, you know, you guys are better than all these other big teams we work with. You guys know more, or work harder, or whatever. And it's like, that's the aggravating part, where it's like, a lot of these people that are bigger producers aren't smarter and don't work harder or don't whatever. I you know, sometimes it's like they're born to the right family or standing in the right spot. But what I am finding, though, is most of the people that are doing $2 million in revenue are busting their ass in one way or another. You know, like, you don't do $5 or $10 million in revenue without really working hard for the most part. So that's kind of where I'm trying to really focus and say, what am I not doing, and, you know, what needs to happen to take that next step? You know, like, why does this guy in my office get all these private wealth referrals when, like, he basically told me he's not even that smart and doesn't, you know, he doesn't even, you know, understand the markets as much as, you know, people think he does, you know, like, or like when someone who's just, quite frankly, obnoxious gets a massive referral, you know, like Larry, like Elliot Popper just brought in like $20 million, $30 million client. How the hell does that happen? This guy's like the biggest schmuck in the world. And like, he's like,
same thing, everything about height.
Like, yeah. Like, imagine like Gilbert Godfrey as a financial advisor, you know, like, just like who the hell is like wanting to hang out and talk to this guy and give them his life savings. And he doesn't even know what he's doing when it comes to managing money. Like, he's utilizing like Harbor Group. Harbor Group's the one that like helped him close the business up, I think. Like, he's got $30 or $40 million with Eric, you know, and I mean, good for him for realizing that he needs to bring in other people. But like, what prospect at $30 or $40 million is doing that? You know, and then like, he does $700,000 in revenue, but does like $300,000 on like one family is charging like 2% on. How does that happen? Like, does nobody talk to these people? Like, they never leave their igloo or something in the middle of an ice field? I mean, I just don't know how you're getting 2% to manage a relationship when clearly you're not adding any exceptional value. You're just farming the business out to one person or another. Like, I'm just like, you know, losing my mind. Yeah, you know, like there's million-dollar producers that have the same amount of managed money I do. They're just charging their clients 1.5 instead of 1. You know, like, and people are paying it. And I'm like, Who's paying 1.5-2%? Like, not in Boca. I mean, you know, we're in a competitive marketplace here. I'm not in Davenport, Iowa, where there's like 3 advisors. But like, you know, how does that happen? You know, like, you know what one guy told me? This was his pitch. The firm wants us to charge 3, but we like you so much, we're gonna give you a 25% discount. So we're gonna charge you 2.25. People are like, wow, thanks. You know, and like, they're on board at 2.25. You know, the firm just cut us to where the max fee we can charge is 2, and our branch lost like $150,000 in revenue. Like, how does that happen? You know, like, a quarter point. You know, it's like $60 million that people are paying like north of 2% on. And I'm just like, gotta be kidding me, you know, like, so I just don't get it. You know?
All right, we're out of time.
That's a loser. Bye. Thank you.
All right, so you're going to follow up. Really think to yourself, you know, if we signed them up, would it help them? Don't worry about all their objections, okay? Don't think about their objections. Would it, if we signed them up, would it help them? And that's what you want to do. When you get an introduction, get an opportunity, follow through, get a chance to speak directly to the client, and you make up your own mind whether that's a good relationship that you want to have. Okay? Thanks. Talk next
time. Have a great day.
All right. Bye-bye.
Thanks.